All right, all of you good citizens of Crypt Nation. It is Bryce and Pizza Mind. We've been in the studio all freaking day. You guys only get one podcast a week, but today, Pete, this is our third recording. It has been a barn burner of a day, but it's been fun. I mean, I'm learning a lot. How are you feeling? Are you holding up over there in your corner of the studio?
You know, I'm powered by Zip Fizz, even though I'm not sponsored by it. So I'm good. I got this one left in me. And this is going to be really interesting because this is a conversation we haven't had for a while. We've been talking about all these different trends and smoke and mirrors with DeFi and interoperability. But this is one sector that has begun to fly a little bit under the radar, even though it's probably the most important. So we're going to be talking again about security tokens because even though it's not a popular topic right now, while sushi is getting listed everywhere, if that dates when this podcast was recorded, it's definitely probably the most important thing that's happening.
And one of the things that we all, yeah, no joke. And one of the things that we always say in Crypt Nation is like, you always need to be contrarian, right? You always need to look for the opportunities that nobody's talking about. And to your point, I mean, security tokens were all the craze, you know, in 2018 and the bear market, right, in 2019. And then slowly it just kind of faded into the background. But I think that's going to change. And today we're joined by an expert in security tokens, a gentleman, a scholar, who goes by the name of Gunnar Zverev, a nice Estonian, strong Estonian name. Gunnar, welcome to Crypto 101 Podcast, calling in today from Hong Kong. How are we doing?
I'm doing great, and thanks for having me. And that was a really amazing intro.
we're famous for our introductions here, but yeah, we are really excited to dive in because everybody, I mean, people are asking all the time, like, you know, what is tokenization mean, and what does it mean to put securities on the blockchain, what all that. So we're gonna dive into that. We're gonna look at the differences between cryptocurrencies and crypto securities, right? Stocks and bonds and real estate on the blockchain. So we're going to dive into that. And I hope everybody's got a notepad and a pen here because there's going to be a lot of really good information that you guys are going to want to rely on and call upon here as this whole trend starts to unfold into the middle of the 2020s, right? I mean, this is a trend that is just now picking up steam. But, you know,
just a little bit more of the background of why Gunnar's the perfect guest for this. Estonia probably has the best regulations in the world for tokenized securities. In fact, there's other tokenized security platforms that are in Estonia, but Gunnar is the COO of First Digital Trust. It is a company that can issue tokenized securities, and they have a bunch of really interesting products that tokenized securities need that I haven't seen exist anywhere else. So we're going to jump into that too. But before we do, let's take it all the way back to the beginning. Some people are hearing about this for the very first time. Gunnar, tell us, what is a tokenized security in comparison to a normal cryptocurrency?
Well, I think the good way to approach it is to sort of break it down into two parts. So if you look at the word tokenized security, you have the token and you have the security aspect there. So we can look at what a security is, and security is basically an investment contract where there is an expectation of yield or profit. And we can look at the other aspect, which is the token side. I mean, you know, there is smart contract platforms, and there's really nothing stopping anyone creating that investment contract on a blockchain and putting it on a blockchain and then reaping all the benefits that the blockchain brings, like, you know, faster transfers, better operability, all of these things. So security token is nothing more basically than an investment contract that has been created on a blockchain, and it might have some automation built into it, let's say in terms of distributions or in terms of permissioning. But yeah, it's like security like any other.
Very, very interesting. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what kind of work you guys are doing at First Digital Trust. And maybe you could tell us a little bit. I know it was born out of another legacy trust. So tell us about the beginnings of this and what you guys are really trying to accomplish.
Yeah, so legacy trust is sort of our legacy. Legacy Trust has been around since 92, actually, and it was mainly operating in a very traditional space, being a trustee for pension funds and providing these very traditional services. And a few years back, when I joined the company, I was heading the special projects or what we call private labels department. And later on, around that time, we started getting inquiries about, you know, different blockchain projects. Back then, ICOs were all the craze. And we started really focusing on this industry, and we we looked at what are the issues. Back then, security was an issue. Security, as in cybersecurity, tokens getting stolen. We looked at really closely at custody. You know, what are the mechanics and regulations in terms of holding the assets? We were really the first company in Asia to push for proper custody of assets, independent qualified custody. And, you know, as you know, now there's so many players around the world doing that. And it was, for us, for Legacy, it was a very young industry. We were not 100% sure whether this is going to be around in a few years. We definitely saw the potential. So that's why we built it under Legacy's brand as a sort of a separate business unit. And that takes us to 2019, when our management and our company decided that the time is ripe to spin it off into a separate business, separate company. We felt that the industry is getting stronger business-wise. We saw that, this business unit itself could sustain itself very, very well. And that's the reason, and that's the genesis story of First Digital Trust. It's essentially a spin-off from Legacy Trust Company. And at First Digital Trust, our primary focus is on the infrastructure and providing services to the digital asset and crypto space and the whole industry.
Very cool. So let's talk about that infrastructure for just a second, because it takes an entirely different type of infrastructure for security tokens versus just issuing some food coin on Ethereum. What are these different different pieces that have to be in place for security tokens?
Well, I mean, there is a big elephant in the room, which is the regulation. There is a lot of companies trying to do security tokens, but many of them are not regulated, and everybody sort of tries to skirt around that somehow and avoid that topic, or, you know, think that if they call things in a different way, you know, if they call it SDO, then all of a sudden it's not a security. But what it really takes to be successful in this space is you have to play by the rules. You have to have regulatory standing. Because when you're dealing with investments, basically all eyes are on, you know, on the issuer. So I would say the regulatory standing is one of the main things. And for anybody to participate in this space, they need to have some sort of licensing. They need to have, proper background, and they need to understand the security side of things as well. It's not only about tokenization. That's why, you know, when we call it tokenized securities, you have that first part, which is tokenization, but you also have the security part, which is heavily, heavily regulated.
Yeah. And in addition to that, let's say I've got some OMG coins in my Ethereum wallet and I lose the private keys. Well, who cares? I can go buy more. Mm-hmm. But if I have a token that represents ownership of my house or fractionalized ownership of a company that dividends are getting paid to, like that kind of thing can't get lost. You just can't have something that's not owned anymore. So you have to have a registry of who owns what so it can be recovered. There has to be KYC, so you just can't have a bunch of tokenized real estate owned by the Italian mob or the Russian mob or the Chinese mob for that matter. So there's a lot that really goes into it. So really, the token is almost like a digital certificate of a stock, but there's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes. It's very much a digitalized version of the same thing that goes on from transfer agents and brokers and all kinds of stuff that goes on behind the scenes. And that's just not built by Ethereum or NEO or EOS or any of these other normal smart contract platforms. It requires another company that specializes in it, like First Digital Trust, for example.
Yeah, I mean, this is this is why like trust companies are almost perfect for this, and it's sort of interesting because if you think about trusts, you know, these types of arrangements go back hundreds of years, And trusts have been sort of almost like a relic of time for a long, long time. But now trust companies, if you look in the crypto space, you know, you have Gemini in US, which is a trust company. You have, you know, a few other trust companies in US that are really doing great in the crypto space. You know, we're in Hong Kong as a trust company. And this is what trust companies do, really. I mean, we hold people's assets. And when you tokenize something, it's a very interesting point, you know, you brought up, like property. When you tokenize a property, you don't want to token the company or the person that's tokenizing that property to hold the asset as well. If you're the investor, right? So you want an independent party to assure basically that there is something actually behind it, and that, you know, the property is there, the title is being held properly. You know, if the token issuer himself is holding the property, you know, what's stopping him from running away and, you know, flying to Bahamas and, you know, taking all the money with him? So that's, you know, that's where trust companies come in. It's not something that's new. It's been around for hundreds of years, but we're just taking it to the next level with some modern technology. And, you know, KYC, all of these things that you mentioned, it's just looking things from a new angle and bringing it to the modern world.
Yeah, the token itself is almost like an NFT, but with a lot more security behind it. Because, I mean, can you imagine having your MetaMask wallet hacked and some guy knocks on your door and is like, "Hi, I have this NFT token now that says I own your house. Get out." And the sheriff is like, "Well, he's got the token. You have to leave, sir." No, it just wouldn't work.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it applies for all kinds of properties, not only like real estate, but, you know, like precious metals, anything. And even if it's like an investment contract, like a security, right? So you want that independent party there to fulfill that role and to provide that safety, let's put it that way. And, you know, we call it a separation of powers in our space. Like if you look at the traditional finance industry, you never have like asset managers holding their clients' assets. You have custodians, you have banks. There's a whole value chain or infrastructure that's in place to power modern financial space. And I think that's what the security token space also needs, is the infrastructure and the whole value chain to be in place for this to fully take off.
Yeah. It's funny that we're on this topic, and Pete's, I love that analogy you just came up with. But I was talking with my girlfriend the other day about this saying that we heard on TV, and it was, possession is 9/10 of the law. And this whole idea that we're talking about right now is like, all laws, call it 90% of laws, are all about enforcing possession and saying that you have the right to this or you have the right to that. And there, you know, law and order is all around like my right to own what's mine and all that kind of stuff. So with a trust, it just really shows that, you know, there are, you know, entire businesses around securing possession and custody of assets. Just kind of cool. But beyond, you know, creating security tokens, what are some other innovations you guys are really proud of that you guys are working on over at First Digital Trust?
So I think one of the things that we're really trying to push now, and we're trialing this with some of our clients, is a settlement network. And it's really a fancy way of saying that we allow people to transfer assets within our platform between and amongst themselves. And that's automated real-time gross settlement. So that's quite interesting because it's first in Asia. You've seen similar networks pop up in US, like, you know, Silvergate Exchange Network or, you know, Signet and alike. But there's really nothing in Asia. And I think this is quite interesting because in Hong Kong, we can service clients from all the different nations. And it really allows transfer of assets between, you know, different, let's say, clients, whether they're exchanges or OTC desks or token issuers, in a more efficient way and locally here on you know, on this side of the earth.
One main function and benefit of a tokenized security is it allows for fractionalized ownership. Mm-hmm. Again, dating this episode, we just saw Amazon and Tesla do a stock split. I believe it was Amazon. I know Tesla Apple. Did. Apple. Apple and Tesla did a stock split because their stocks got way too expensive for people to buy. So if they were tokenized, you can have fractional ownership. You can buy $10 worth of a stock, or in this case, a security token, or even less as a tokenized security. So that's really awesome. And it gets rid of this barrier to entry so anyone can have a chance to be an owner. However, U.S. law still restricts these opportunities to accredited investors, people that can afford to buy a stock at any price. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really add any more inclusion from a U.S. citizen perspective. And furthermore, citizens of the most horribly oppressed countries that need tools to dig their way out of poverty and corruption, they're also blocked from participating due to political embargoes. Is this something that can ever change? And if so, how would it ever?
Well, I think, yeah, there's two sides to it. I think it's actually a quite sensible thing to have regulations. Otherwise, we're going to have same thing happening, you know, what was going on during the ICO days, where you just have a lot of people selling all these kinds of, you know, scam tokens. So regulation in that sense is good. Sensible regulation is good. And we're all in favor for that. I think it's, you know, once the regulators start understanding this industry more and more, and once some bigger players start issuing securities as tokens, they will become more commonplace, and those regulations will become a little bit more relaxed and probably more similar to, you know, how stocks and other kind of financial instruments are regulated. But the flip side, it's quite interesting. You mentioned, you know, some of the troubled nations and developing countries, all of that. I think what's really happening there is people don't care about regulations there. And, you know, they go out to the streets and protest and do all of that and protest about their government, I really don't think they're going to follow it. And you've seen that happening in different countries in Asia. You've seen that happening in Africa and South America. People like crypto there, they will find their way to get hands on Bitcoin. And, you know, it's just amazing how these people can get really creative to get hands on. And I don't think they'll be too worried about, you know, what the regulation of the government that they probably don't even like is, you know, is saying. And we've seen that happening, you know, like in many countries.
That's awesome. Can you talk about some of the benefits of tokenizing a security? And one of the things I'll kind of start the discussion with is an analogy that I really like using to kind of paint the picture for everybody is real estate, right? We've seen some really cool projects. A lot of them are on Tezos right now, where, you know, you could be the owner of, for instance, an Aspen resort. Mm-hmm. Which is something that just happened. And instead of saying, hey, we need to sell this entire resort to a singular buyer, what you can do is you could raise money through kind of more public markets and mm-hmm. say, okay, well, we're going to split this resort up into, you know, 100 or 500 different slices, right, of fractions. Mm-hmm. And then Bryce can buy a share of the cash flows associated with this resort, and Gunner can buy, you know, a share, and Pizza Mine could buy a share. And now you have, you know, through this tokenization process, you have access to more liquidity as a seller of an asset. Mm-hmm. And as a buyer of an asset, you have access to more opportunities, and you have access to that liquidity because you could say, hey, you know, I want to get in and out of this, this market, you know, flip it in a day or 2 days or 5 days or whatever you want. Whereas traditionally with real estate, it's just totally stuck in the mud. You know, it takes months and months and months to do a deal. So that's one of the ones that I like to think about. But what about you? What do you think about all this?
Well, real estate is definitely an interesting thing because, you know, people see real estate as a safe haven, and people tend to understand real estate. Like average investor tends to understand real estate because everybody has a house. They kind of get the mechanics. So I think it's definitely one of the first classes that's going to be tokenized and is already being actually tokenized. I also think precious metals are quite interesting, interesting area. There are some difficulties associated with that because in many places, precious metals are seen more as a sort of a security or investment product that's very heavily regulated. But there's some interesting projects going on in that space. And then after that, I think there's also a lot of potential for some of the more, let's say, speculative products that are not necessarily backed by assets, but by definition, there are still securities. So like different derivatives and all of that. But there's just a lot of mechanics and infrastructure that needs to be in place for that to happen. But, you know, you mentioned also about liquidity. I think one of the key areas that needs some progress is the exchanges where these security tokens could be exchanged. You can tokenize things all day long, but if you don't have, you know, solid markets where these could be traded, then it's sort of pointless to tokenize. So we're seeing some movement also on that side. Like my prediction, and I've been saying this for the past 2 years, is that I think the first markets will pop up probably in US and Europe or Canada, countries where you have a massive population and where one sort of company spearheads and creates an exchange that you know, everybody can access. But we are also seeing some progress, like in Hong Kong, the SFC here just, I believe it was last week, approved the first security token exchange license. So that's a very interesting development. These are sort of my thoughts on some of the benefits. And of course, you get the usual stuff like fractional ownership, you know, speedy transfers, built-in KYC, you know, ownership records, all of that.
And I would also say an automatically adjusting cap table. For instance, I've bought some equities in a traditional way, and you know, mm-hmm. It's 8 months later, I still don't have anything in the mail because it's such a huge pain in the ass to actually process all these things. But on blockchain, it's immediate. One other thing I want to bring up that you guys are building that I think is super cool is this Open Trust API. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of projects that I talk to that are in the tokenized security space that are trying to do interoperability with APIs and stuff. And here's a secret that nobody knows. The API infrastructure in crypto is absolute dog shit. There are zero standards, no quality guidelines. It's wild, wild west, even more than the crazy prices rising and falling. Getting two APIs to work together is extremely difficult. So if you guys are building something that allows everyone using tokenized securities to follow your API standard or use this to connect a bunch of different things together, that is a huge deal. Can you give us the breakdown on how the Open Trust API kind of works and who might be using it and how it might help security token issuers and exchanges that might be listening to this podcast right now?
Yeah, so Open Trust APIs are basically set of APIs that enable other companies to plug into our infrastructure for some of the key functions, for example, client onboarding, account opening, because if you're issuing securities, you need to have, client accounts set up. Then there is also a bunch of reporting functions and features that we're bringing on. It's essentially a full stack of APIs of what a trust company does. So that's, it goes back to what I was saying before, is like we're taking this centuries old concept and we're trying to digitize it. And then on top of that, yes, I completely agree. APIs in the crypto space are quite horrible. So we are also very aware of that. We're trying to build a good customer experience. For us, we mainly deal with B2B clients. So we are working with each client basically in a very sort of one-on-one way. So when they decide to use our APIs or try to onboard, we will assign them like a particular person that will walk them through the integration. If, we discover that there's something extra that they need, we're also open to a collaborative process where we can, add additional endpoints. But it's very much a new thing for us. We're also trying to bring it to the market, but trying to make it in a way that's, that there is proper like quality assurance in a way in place. Yeah.
Makes a ton of sense. So Gunnar, I mean, I can't believe how much time has already flown. We're already a half an hour into it. But before we let you go, we want to get your insight just briefly. Again, this is, we don't want to get too into politics,
but it's not every day.
Yeah, we don't want to rock the boat. You know how I am. Pizza Mind likes to rock the boat. I'm more of like, you know.
I'll sink that ship, baby.
But yeah, give
let
us your.
Let the sailors swim.
Let the sailors swim. We don't speak to folks from Hong Kong too often. So can you give us an update on freedom in Hong Kong or what the story is over there and, you know, your thoughts?
Well, I think it's quite a loaded question. So
let me rephrase it. How is the financial business market in Hong Kong right now? Is it still healthy and thriving? Is it still the financial hub of Asia, or are you seeing any kind of shifts in the wind?
Yeah, I think the financial markets in Hong Kong are actually quite resilient and strong. One of the interesting things, and you know, when I moved to Hong Kong, about 10 years ago, I discovered Hong Kong is a very business-minded city. You know, business comes first in Hong Kong, and everybody's all about making money. And while we had some of these, you know, disturbances, there are industries that are really heavily hit, like, you know, F&B and retail and all of that. The banks and everybody that's been operating in the digital space has been actually doing pretty good. And, you know, if we look at the financial markets, we have some interesting IPOs happening in Hong Kong. So that's going strong. And, you know, another thing that I wanted to maybe highlight here is, you know, due to COVID, a lot of countries like Singapore actually shut down for a while. But Hong Kong has been going on through this time. We haven't closed the offices. You know, we've been, everybody's at work in the morning, and, you know, we've been doing great in that sense. So I think Hong Kong people are very resilient. They're very hardworking, and, you know, they understand that, you know, business needs to go on. So that's, you know, that's what's been keeping the, you know, the markets going and keeping everything good. Of course, there's disturbances, but I think, you know, it's nothing that could be, you know, overcome.
Awesome. Makes a ton of sense. And we always appreciate those, you know, those anecdotes from the real world here. So before we let you go, there's a couple questions we like to ask every guest that comes on the show, just to provide a little bit of color into who you are, what makes you tick. I want to know about a person that you've met in the crypto industry specifically that has really made a tremendous impact on you for the better.
So maybe I'll sort of rephrase your question or edit it a little bit. It's not a person that I have met, but I think everybody in this space, you know, needs to tip the hat to Satoshi in a way. You know, because if whoever, I hope he's listening, and whoever he is, you know, wherever in the world he is, if he wasn't there, we wouldn't be having these discussions. You know, if he wasn't there writing on discussion boards and putting together these crazy white papers back then, that was, you know, a very, a crazy idea, right? We wouldn't be having these discussions. And I think, you know, once in a while, we need to sort of look back and where all of this got started. And I think it also shows some grit and, you know, persistence. And that's what we need in this space. We need projects that are basically here for the long term, more about the vision and building out that vision instead of making maybe a quick buck. And I think, yeah, whoever that person is that, you know, created Bitcoin and put out that white paper, you know, I'd like to have a beer with him sometime. I haven't met him yet.
You and me both, brother. That would be awesome. Yeah. And then lastly, just a quick, you know, sentence or two. We always like to ask this question, but if this was the very first podcast that somebody who's entering into the crypto space has heard, right? Mm-hmm. What would be one word of wisdom that you would kind of want to leave them with here?
I think there's two things. I think one of the things is don't get too wrapped up into like trading and, you know, getting in. Getting rich quick schemes and all of that. That's just, you know, tip of the iceberg of what this whole industry is. And it's not always the most accurate representation. But also, you know, learn about different things. I believe hugely in the power of decentralization and, you know, having different microservices and different smaller units that work together as a cohesive thing. It's a very powerful thing used in the right way. So, yeah, it takes a lot of self-learning, but yeah, that would be my recommendation.
Awesome. Yeah, guys, don't get discouraged. Don't get freaked out. Don't get overwhelmed. We're all still learning. This is a very, very new space and you're in the right place. I mean, you really are.
Unless you're trying to buy kimchi right now and driving the price of Ethereum gas up over 600, shame on you.
For anybody who doesn't know what he's talking about, he is talking about some of the insane DeFi experiments that are clogging up the Ethereum network as of September 1st. It has been quite interesting to watch all unfold, especially since the assets that these people are trading are named after sushi and Korean barbecue. But that's a conversation for another podcast. Mr. Gunnar Zverev, thank you so much for spending your time with us today. And we hope you have an awesome rest of your day and we'll catch up with you soon.
Likewise. Thanks for having me. It's been really great being on and yeah, let's catch up soon.
Ciao.